All right, so I'd like to call to order the Finance and Administration Committee meeting to order. Today is Monday, October 15th, 2018. It is 6 p.m. And if we could just go around, I'll take the roll for the Finance Committee. And I am here, Carmela Corsini.
Russ Vasquez.
Okay, and Susan Conti should be joining us shortly. And then if you can go around the table and just put your name in for the record.
Joan Rock, Finance Director.
Is yours?
Yeah, turn your mic.
Joan Rock, Finance Director.
Cheryl Scott, Assistant Finance Director.
Is it on? Yes.
Kimberly Marshall with BKD, a Director.
Okay, thanks for being here tonight. So the purpose of this meeting, we have several agenda items. Oh, that's right. Actually, Susan is now here, so joining us right now. Okay, so we are here. There is no public comment, so we'll move to item number four, which is approval of past meeting minutes. And Joan and I, we just kind of went back and looked to see. I know we were deficient in actually having some minutes online. So we went back about a year just to try to figure out what happened with those, and Joan will speak to an email that she sent to me.
Yeah, I did find that the September 27th meeting minutes from 2017 were approved at a village board meeting on October 9th, and then the January, what was the next one? Oh, the November 2nd, 2017 joint finance committee minutes were approved at the January 25th joint meeting. At least they were on the agenda. I haven't located the actual minutes. So we definitely still have to approve the January 25th, 2018 and May 14, 2018 minutes. The January 25th was a joint meeting, and then May 14th was just a finance committee meeting when we discussed what we were going to do with the pension funding policy. So it was a fairly brief
right.
meeting. So.
In my purpose,
I will put together
yeah.
meeting or minutes
okay.
for those if need be.
So then if we can, at the next regular village board meeting, if we could just have those, because we could approve those as part of the regular village board meeting, and then just have staff update the website with the actual approved minutes
okay.
so that they're online. Okay, so we'll get that done by, and I can't remember, what's our November meeting? Have we set our date
it's
yet for
26th.
That? Okay. Okay, so we'll get past that item. The next item is for us to review the fiscal year 2018 comprehensive annual financial report, which we have been distributed a draft of. And Joan has some memos attached to it as far as a overview. And we have the director of BKD, Kim Marshall, here tonight. To walk through the draft, walk through the management letter, and answer any questions that we have with respect to the draft of the audit. And my goal is, after we go through this tonight and answer any questions, just take a vote on recommending the approval or acceptance, I should say, of the draft as the final at the village board meeting tonight. So with that, I will have
I'm going to go through the
Joan.
Financial Act ready first, and then
okay.
I'm going to hand it over to Kim.
All right, so hand it over to Joan.
Okay.
Take it away, Joan. Your last hurrah.
Yes,
here.
my last CAFR, hopefully. We'll see. You never know.
You never know.
Yeah.
On page one of my memo, I'm going to kind of go through my memo when you follow
okay.
through and explain it a little bit.
The one dated October?
October 8th.
Right.
Page one includes general fund revenues, and overall budgeted revenues exceeded actual revenues by $248,973. Taxes and intergovernmental revenue were $318,000 lower than the budgeted amount, and this is primarily due to the 10% reduction in
sure.
state income tax, and then because the 911 tax, which we used to collect and then sort of use that to fund our contribution to Westcom. Now that revenue is sent directly to Westcom. So we had budgeted a full year of that revenue, not knowing when this was actually going to take place, and only a small portion of that came in. And now going forward, that will no longer be coming to the village. It goes straight there, and then our contribution to Westcom is reduced because of that. So that we will no longer see that revenue on our financial statements. So that's the two main reasons why taxes and intergovernmental were down. There were some fluctuations in other line items, but nothing to be concerned about.
And do you expect the tax portion of that 10% then to be going on?
No, it's now will be changed to 5% in beginning July 1st, 2018. Okay. So already it is, yeah, because it's more.
So
it's
half of
down to 5%. So half of a reduction from what it was.
Thanks.
And then also, did we talk about the fees that they were charging us to distribute the home rule, non-home rule sales tax? They were charging us a fee.
To process that, and that fee is reduced to 1.5% now, so that fee's gone down too, so our non-home rule sales tax revenue should go up a little bit. Not much, but a little bit. And then charges for services is down. Ambulance fees were budgeted quite high. That was actually when Jim Egger was still here, but he was hopeful that we would get that number. I talked to Kurt, and as it turns out, the ALS transports went down this year and BLS went up, and advanced life support transports cost more money than basic life support transports, so our revenue went down considerably. We had hoped for an increase and we actually went down. So he said total call volume is about the same, but it's the types of calls. It might also have something to do with that medical facility on North Avenue. I think they stopped using. Yeah, they outsourced.
Oh,
so
okay.
Loyola.
That I think affected us as well. So that might have been more of our advanced life support calls that now are down. So.
And I know this is probably more of a budget question, but their collection activity, we should probably look at when we do the budget as far as.
Yeah,
how successful they're being with that.
Looked at that, but yeah, that's something that can be looked at again.
Okay.
And then the other big item was the net change in the IRMA deposit, and that really helped our finances this year, that increase, and that's primarily due to investment earnings on our money that's held at IRMA. That we had a significant amount of investment earnings this year, over $200,000 for our money at IRMA. Certain amount is monies that were required to hold at IRMA. It's about $1.1 million that we're required to hold, and then we have balances that we've accumulated mostly in the last few years because of these huge investment gains. They can invest in things that we can't invest in, so their investment gains are not like ours. So, we've gotten a lot of money there. We have been, as I talked to Carmela, we have been spending that down and applying that to our annual payment, but it has our balance over there has grown, so it might be a part of the budget discussion on how we're going to use that money in the future.
And just for everybody's sake, just explain IRMA is our.
Oh, that's the risk pool. Yeah, that's our risk management pool.
Public. So that's our property and casualty and
workers' comp
insurance pool that we're a part of. So part of that money is required to be maintained there. We've actually experienced some, knock on wood, better experiences on property and casualty and workers' comp.
Just helped us.
Issues, so you know that reduces the amount that you have to have on reserve. So all those things in combination with the investments actually causes that fund balance to exceed what it was last year. So I guess it's a good thing.
It's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
And so we can use part of that money to pay off or decrease our payments for the property and casualty and workers' comp premiums on an annual basis. So we're going to look at maybe just putting a policy together about how we address that excess balance at some point in the future. So, yeah.
That's what Eric said.
Right. So, I mean, just it's good news that, you know, we have that extra cushion to be able to deal with those premium policy questions.
Okay, on to page two. On page two, there's a chart at the bottom of the page that shows the expenditures by department. Wanted to highlight a few bigger differences. You'll see on the E11 line that the actual expenditures are considerably lower than the budgeted expenditures for Westcom. And that is because of the revenue from the E911 tax that used to come in here and now is being distributed to them. So, and then police department expenditures are lower than the budgeted but higher than the prior fiscal year. Salaries include the increases per the collective bargaining agreement. Fire department expenditures were lower than the budget and prior year due to the elimination of the deputy chief position, and overtime costs have also been reduced. And this year we also added a new part-time administrative position to help, you know, take care of some of the things that the deputy used to take care of.
Okay.
These sort of things out a little bit. Their contract, as you know, still hasn't been settled, so we've got estimated salary increases included in the actual number. So they're not, there is not, some increase is included in these numbers. So it's not going to be a big hit when we eventually settle. Contributions to the police and fire pension funds are higher than the prior fiscal year. And the budget reflects the amount of the 2017 property tax levy, which was from the prior pension funding policy and the transition plan that we approved as part of that. Actual expenditures are slightly lower because the collections are from the 2016 levy and the 2017 levy. And the 2016 levy is lower, so the actual collections are generally lower than the amount that we have included in the budget. Public works expenditures were higher than the budgeted amount, which is unusual. And that is because overtime costs were up for snow and ice control. Mm-hmm. And traffic light maintenance costs exceeded the budget amount, and there was apparently an increased number of underground cable repairs, which we can't really anticipate. And he said, John said, we have an old system, so you can't really tell how that's going to go in a given year. So, then on page 3, I have a chart showing revenues over expenditures and the balance, fund balance. Fund balance increased 111,589 for the fiscal year. The village policy requires that unassigned fund balance plus the amount restricted for working cash be at least 25% of the subsequent year's expenditures. This amount decreased to 37.2% from 47.2% in the prior fiscal year. This is because of the loan to the TIF fund. The $1,340,000 was lent to the TIF fund to purchase those two properties within the TIF, the Madison Street TIF district. And that money is set up as an advance, so it's like money due to the general fund. Yes. The offset on the other side is non-spendable fund balance, so it is not in our, you know, unassigned fund balance. And so until that's paid off, that's going to continue to reduce our unassigned fund balance.
And historically, we do transfer the money from the TIF back and repay the loan.
Yes, obviously the intent is, we did pay the interest back on the loan. There's an interest factor on the loan. We paid the interest back, and we have a written policy now that we are going to pay the interest back every year, so there will be no interest accruing on the loan every year.
Yeah, until you get money.
Until we get
in the
money
TIF.
In the right. TIF, we won't be paying that back. So
we don't put a time limit on this loan.
There's not right now a time limit.
Yeah, you can. I mean, it can be an interfund balance
in advance,
for as long as, you know, until you pay it, and then just do the transfer back. And, you know, depending on what we're doing in the future with our TIF funds, as far as whether we're going to issue bonds to, you know, have to pay some of these expenses back. I mean, we're not going
to
have enough money in
you
the,
either have to
the
wait
next
for
year, right?
Increment,
mm-hmm.
or
right.
Issue bonds.
Right.
For that and other things, if you're doing a development project in the district. So,
I just want to forget about it.
Or you won't forget about it.
We won't forget about it.
Yeah.
It's
no,
on
that's
there
an interfund
as a loan.
Transfer, and it's, yeah.
It's in the financial
right.
statements. So we're not going to, it can't be forgotten about. Yeah. And then on page 4, I start talking about, did anyone else have any questions on the general fund before I move on to the water and sewer fund? No, we're good? Okay. Water and Sewer Fund, I begin talking about on page 4. I've got a chart. The Water and Sewer Fund is doing very well, which is good. We've had a lot going on in that fund for the last several years. The net position increased by $1,210,000. The village experienced a 2.7% increase in billed consumption, and primarily this is due to weather conditions. When it's to do with watering, we have a lot of people with irrigation systems, so we're greatly affected by weather conditions. So if it's dry or wetter, or some people just water anyway, it helps our revenue stream. We also had increased rates 4.7% to cover higher operating and capital costs, and also to offset the 1.83% increase in the cost of water from the City of Chicago. So the water fund has been doing very, very well. The bonds, the 2008B bonds, are falling off, so we will not have GO bonds in the water fund in this next tax levy. We won't have an abatement for them. They're not, they don't have to be considered the next tax levy.
So I have a question about this too. With the net increase, we have forecasted water rate increases over the next few years still.
They're very minimal going
still,
forward.
Still, because we've already hit the lion's share of them. Right?
So I think what I included in my last version was pretty much increases to offset Chicago increases. And if there's any operating increases going out, they're very minimal. And we that'll be a discussion with the next budget, but it's very possible that we do not need to do a water rate increase at all next year. Or you don't want to get to the point where you all of a sudden have to do a huge one, so you've got to keep an eye on it.
Right.
Because you don't want to really upset people, so you've got to make sure you're in the right place. But we've ended up in a better place because our consumption has gone up the last couple of years, and our assumption on our consumption was lower, so we're doing better. We're doing better than we had expected to be doing.
And your water loss rate also, you know, may have effect with that. It's gone down a little bit.
It's gone down. We have big breaks that cause problems, but
well, we just approved that supersonic
water
break. I'm really excited about that. I mean, we could save a lot of money with that. That should pay for itself.
Right.
Yeah,
that was really an exciting
and,
thing.
You know, let's not forget too that the sewer project is being funded through these water rights, and so that's why we have to be really cognizant of making sure that we have enough to pay the debt payments from those water rates. So you don't want to just you have to maintain a certain rate, and then Joan was taking a look at the payment portion of that for the debt service to make sure that we had enough in there to cover those payments as well.
And we do projections on the Water and Sewer Fund just like we do for the general fund as part of the budget process, so that we look at where, based on what we're doing now, where is it going to look in the future.
And we have that water rate study that we do occasionally, periodically, just to keep us on track as well.
Yeah, the last time they did the water rate study, though, they looked at everything and they pretty much just said that our rates looked like they were fine. So we didn't really get a lot of new information from it. So I think until we're looking at going in a different direction, like a different rate structure or something else, adding a stormwater fee, I don't know that we really need to do another rate study.
Okay.
We didn't get a lot out of it last
time. But that was after how many years? We
had
done it 5 years ago, I think, or 4 years ago.
Yeah.
The first time.
But that was after we had done the project, so it was good to hear that we looked like we'd done the right thing through the project. So, and then again, I say this every year, but I encourage you all to read the transmittal letter and the management's discussion and analysis. They're at the beginning of the report. There are two narratives that I prepare, and they sort of summarize the financial information, and then the management discussion and analysis also describes the financial statements that are in the report, so you kind of get an understanding of what they are. The report is long and can be very confusing, so that gives you could help you get a little better understanding of what's in the report.
I can't imagine that nobody read the, how many hundreds of pages?
It's a lot of
I know you both did.
We put in here what we have to put in here. We don't choose to make the report this long. And it gets longer pretty much every year.
Every time we have new requirements.
Yeah. GASB is not asking us to make the report smaller, only bigger. I now ask Kim to go through the financial report and explain the entity-wide financial statements a little bit and the opinion, and then the SAS 114 letter.
Thanks, Joan. So thanks, everyone, for your time today and also for the opportunity to continue to work with the village. And just to, before I get started, just want to thank Joan and Cheryl for all their help during the audit process. We really appreciate it. So I'm going to touch on a few pages in the CAFR, and then I'm also going to go through this S-114, but if there's any questions, please feel free to just interrupt me. So just starting with the CAFR, I'm going to start with the financial section, which is after the transmittal letter. I'm going to start with our independent auditor's report, which is pages 1 through 3 of the CAFR. So it starts out just disclosing management's responsibility as well as auditor's responsibility. But on the top of the second page is where we actually state our opinion. And this is a clean, unmodified opinion. This is the best opinion you can get, similar to prior years. Following the independent auditor's report, or the opinion, is what Joan mentioned earlier, is your MD&A. And I also would encourage you to read through the MD&A. It's a really important document that emphasizes financial highlights during the year. It does discuss in a little more detail some of the areas that Joan already mentioned, as well as there's some really nice tables in there that gives you a comparative look at the current year versus the prior year. And just to point out, in the MD&A on page 9, there is a nice table in here that gives you the impact of the pension liabilities on net position, which I'm going to discuss a little bit more when we start talking about the government-wide financial statements. So after the MD&A is what we call the government-wide section. This provides readers with a broad overview of the village's finances, similar to a private sector business. The statement of net position on pages 21 and 22 provide information on all of the village's assets and liabilities and deferred inflows and outflows, with the difference reported as your net position. So the governmental net activities of your net position decreased by $1.5 million to arrive at a total net position of $3 million. And this decrease is really mainly due to that net pension liability and all the related deferred inflows and outflows of $1.6 million decrease. So there was a table that I mentioned in the MD&A on page 9, and that gives you more detail of what makes up this $1.6 million decrease. And it discloses the details more relating to the IMRF portion as well as the police and firefighters portions as well. For business type activities, there was a net pension increase for the year, as Joan mentioned, of $1.2 million that did relate to consumption increase as well as rate increases. So your overall net position change for the year was a decrease of $276,000, arriving at an ending net position of $7.4 million. So your fund financial statements start on page 25, and this provides a more complete and detailed information on the village's major functions and activities. So unlike your government-wide financial statements, these fund-level statements don't include such things as capital assets, depreciation, and long-term debt, as your fund financial statements really look at spendable resources and activities that are available in the short-term perspective. So the general fund is the village's primary operating fund, and on page 27, the general fund shows an increase in your fund balance of $111,000, arriving at an ending fund balance of $10.4 million. And as Joan mentioned earlier, this does relate to property and sales tax, slightly up from the prior year. And also, general fund expenses were lower in the current year due to a variety of different reasons that Joan mentioned, as well as it's detailed out in your MD&A. So your proprietary funds, which is basically your water, work, and sewer funds, starts on page 29 to 32. And this really is presented in the same manner that you see it in the government-wide perspective. So you can see on page 31, there is a change in your net position of a positive of $1.2 million and your ending net position of $10.4 million. On page 33 and 34 are your fiduciary fund statements. This shows a total of your police and firefighter pension funds. And in the back of the CAFR on page 124 through 127, it does give you more detail specifically of the balances that relate to the police versus the firefighters. On page 35 starts your notes to your financial statements. I wasn't going to go through too much detail here. They're very consistent with the prior year. There's nothing new that was implemented in fiscal year 18 to point out. I think the only added change in your significant accounting policies relate to your land held for resale, which related to the TIF Madison property purchase. But besides that, your footnotes are very, very consistent with the prior year. And then following your notes, you do have, starting on page 100, your combining and individual fund schedules. This does include a budget to actual look at your different funds, as well as some of your capital asset and long-term debt schedules. And then in your back, you do have your statistical section from pages 135 to 168. And these are a required component relating to the GFOA certification. So any questions on the CAFR before I look at the SAS 114 letter?
I just always think that the notes are really interesting to read through because that gives you a lot of information. And then the letter that Joan prepares, the management discussion analysis letter, is a great synopsis. So if you're, you know, these are hard to understand, so those are really two great points to just kind of go to understand just the ins and outs of the financial statement. So.
Yeah, absolutely. With the notes, note one really gives you an idea of how certain line items are treated, like the accounting policy that the village has related to them. And then the various notes after it just gives you more detail on specific areas, such as long-term debt, capital assets, that type of thing.
And then those the part at the end with the statistics is always interesting, too, just various budget comparisons, and then just, you know, goes over several years and trends and those types of things. So those are always interesting to look at, tax rates and those types of things. So
the second document I'm going to walk through is what we call our SAS 114, but it's a post-audit communication letter. And this letter is something we issue every year, and it's really just designed to communicate if there were any challenges during the current year, if there is any significant items that we would want to report directly to you. And a lot of this is template language, but I'll cover specific items that relate to the village. So it does start off just disclosing that our responsibility is to report under auditing standards generally accepted in the United States. Under significant accounting policies, this is where we would disclose if there were any new pronouncements implemented in the current year or any significant changes in your policies. There were none, so this area right now just describes where they're located in your financial statements, which is note one. On the second page of this letter is where we disclose any significant estimates, which, similar to the prior year, is your depreciation expense, as well as your pension and post-employment benefit liability and benefit costs. And similar to the prior year, those are based on actuarial assumptions. And then your disclosures, here we just want to highlight a few to point out to your attention. Note 7 is your long-term debt obligations. Note 12 and 14 disclose your activities relating to other post-employment and pension benefits, specifically IMRF and then the Village Police and Firefighter Pension Funds. Under audit adjustments, this is where we would disclose if there were any significant audit adjustments identified during the audit process. And similar to the prior year, there were none, as well as there's no waived journal entries either. And then under other material communications, if there were any other letters that we issue that we'd want you to be aware of, this is what would go in this area. The only item here is the management representation letter, which is what we ask management to sign before we issue the report, basically just acknowledging that they provided everything for the audit. And the next page starts the other matters section, and here we wanted to disclose future pronouncements. The first significant one to be aware of is GASB 75. This does affect post-employment benefits other than pensions or OPEB. So similar to what you kind of saw with GASB 68, this will change your liability that records in your government-wide financial statements, as well as add disclosures to your footnotes and make your CAFR a little bit longer.
In English, it's retiree health insurance.
Thank you.
That's after fiscal years. So we have to do this for next
6/30/19 is when that'll be implemented.
Yes. Okay. then 84.
So the following GASBs really, at this point, are anticipated to have a minimal effect. GASB 75 is the one really that is going to have more of a significant impact and will require some time to put everything together and make sure that you have the right actuarial information as well as the disclosures needed for the report. The other significant one to mention is the leases, but that one's a little bit further down the road.
We have an actuary that prepares our report for our disclosures that we have to include now for retiree health insurance, so we'll probably use the same actuary, and they have all of our data and know what all of our policies are, and they'll be able to put that together without any great deal of difficulty. So I've tasked Cheryl with keeping an eye on that since I'm going to be gone, and making sure that the actuarial report is gotten on time for the audit and all the information that we need.
More fun stuff to incorporate. So no issues with internal control, and everything seemed to be in good working order.
Correct. If there was any material weaknesses or significant deficiencies, that would be included within this letter, and there were none for fiscal year 18, similar to prior year.
Okay. Good. Any other questions you guys have?
Then I take this, there are no issues for us to worry about.
That's correct.
Correct.
Okay.
So clean opinion, no internal control issues.
Okay.
These are just future announcements that we're going to have to incorporate in our financial statements.
Right.
And you'll submit this for another award
mm-hmm.
for the village.
Yes.
I will.
How many years now running?
I lost track. it started before I got here, I can tell you that.
And I think it says on the transmittal letter.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So I think that covers the audit, and I just want to thank Joan and Cheryl and the staff. You know, this is always, these are, you know, between the budget, the tax levy, working on getting the audit prepared, main functions of the finance director, and we've had an ultimate Uber professional working on behalf of the village, and we'll miss her, and we're just going to try to bribe her as much as possible to stay. But in the event she's going to say no, we'll welcome her back anytime to help us out with anything we need. So
I'm not going too far.
Yeah, just so we, you know, want to make sure that we go on the record
right.
thanking you for all your years of service, and you're not leaving yet, but you know, this is definitely the culmination of some great years that you've had, so we appreciate all your hard work.
Thank you, and thank you to the auditors
as well.
Thank you.
Okay, the next item on the agenda is to just discuss the tax levy and other miscellaneous matters. Tonight we're going to announce the estimate of the 2018 property tax levy at the board meeting. We have requirements that has to be done no less than 20 days before the adoption of the levy. So I'm going to have Joan just quickly go through the memo that she issued on October 9th that just outlines the estimate and how she arrived at that, and that then we'll, I'm sorry, you know what, let's go back to, can I get a motion to approve the, or accept the draft of the audit, and then to recommend that passage and the recommend, what's the?
Acceptance.
Acceptance, thank you. To recommend acceptance of the CAFR by the village board.
So moved.
Okay.
Second.
All right, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None? Okay, so we'll make that recommendation at the board. Okay, let's go back to the tax levy and just have you go
through
this.
Would you please tell me what page, is this page on this?
It was an email.
It was just a.
Oh, okay.
That
three.
I sent out later.
Got it.
Just a. Do you need a copy? Because we have
yeah.
an extra.
If you have a copy, it would
yes.
be a lot easier.
Sorry.
No, that's fine. Is it what's the date?
It also had the attachment of the pension fund.
Okay, I have
policy.
It. Yeah. You can have that. Thank you.
Okay, we're doing this a little earlier this year because we want to get the estimate accepted at least 20 days prior to approval of the levy, and there was some question on the upcoming village board schedule, so we wanted to get this done so that we could meet that requirement. So tonight we're requesting a recommendation to accept the estimate of the 2018 property tax levy in the amount of 7,000, $955,642. We're required to determine the estimate at least 20 days prior to the approval of the levy, because if the estimate is over 105% of the 2017 extension, we're required to put a notice, a black border notice, in the paper and hold a public hearing. So the requested increase in the 2018 levy is 2.62%, so we don't have to hold a hearing and we don't have to put that notice in the paper. And that's what we're sort of fulfilling with this requirement. The 2018 levy includes a 2.1% increase, which is the increase in the CPI that's permitted per PTEL, the Property Tax Extension Limitation Law. It also includes an additional increase, assuming $4 million in new property. That's sort of a little bit of a high estimate. The levy will be increased based on the actual amount of new property. So our levy will be cut back if new property is lower than that amount. And that's what pretty much happens every year. The average resident should see about a 2.1% increase in the village portion of their property tax bill.
The average resident won't see a 2.62% increase. It'll be a
2.1.
No, because
2.1.
The point,
because
the other difference is on the new property.
The new property.
So that's why it's higher than 2.1, because I'm including new property. So the total revenue we receive should be more than 2.1%, because we have some on new property. And then it also includes the police and firefighters pension fund levies, and those levies go up every year, and that sort of decreases the amount that we have available in our levy for other purposes. The pension fund levies are based on the actuarial report that's prepared by the village actuary, Lauterbach and Amen, and they're using the recently approved pension funding policies, the ones that we just approved this year. Both pension funds now use the same actuarial assumption, including a 7% interest rate assumption, and the required contributions exceed the amount that has been budgeted for both funds. The budgeted amounts were based on the estimates developed during the pension funding policy review process. The combined, I've got a chart just to go over on the second page. I've got a chart that shows the employer pension fund contributions.
Okay.
Shows the amount that was budgeted and what we're actually levying. We have to levy what's in the actuarial report. We don't have a transition plan anymore like we had in the past. There is no, we don't know exactly what we're going to levy every year anymore, because we don't have this transition plan we're using. We have to levy whatever is in the actuarial report, which we don't know at the time we're preparing the budget. So the budgeted amount will be an estimate going forward.
Does it exceed the required state estimate?
It does. That's in my chart as well. So the statutory minimum is the second to last column.
1.231.
And it does exceed the statutory minimum.
Okay.
By quite a bit.
And then I anticipate we'll probably have to do a budget amendment because of
this.
And then the debt service and library levies are also included in the total village levy. And the debt service levy includes the principal and interest payments on the 2018 bonds that were issued earlier in the year. And then the approval of the 2018 property tax levy will be, I guess, on the 11/26 agenda. When I had originally prepared this memo, I thought there was going to be a December 10th meeting, but I think there's now an 11/26 meeting. So if there is an 11/26 meeting, it will be approved at that meeting.
So the estimate that Joan puts in actually overestimates.
I overestimate.
Then the county brings us back down, so that's why it's closer to the 2.1, because that's what we're basically allowed to increase our levy by, because we're a non-home rule.
Non-home rule.
Yeah, it can be a 2.1% increase on the prior year's extension. So, and then any additional amount would be our rate on the new property.
So, do we need to recommend?
Yeah.
Okay. So, I'd like to have a motion to recommend to the board that we announce the accept the estimate of property tax levy in the amount of $7,955,642, which represents an increase of 2.62 over the 2017 extended corporate tax levy, and is about a 2.1% increase for the CPI.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, and all those in favor of recommending that?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None? Okay, so we'll make that recommendation at the village board meeting as well. Okay, other matters that we wanted to talk about? You know,
there was a change in the, I mentioned to Carmella, there was a change in the state law regarding in our ability to invest in corporate bonds.
Right.
So we're probably going to have to amend the,
investment
we don't
policy.
Currently hold any corporate
okay.
bonds, but we were limited to 270 days. They weren't really worth holding. But it's been expanded to 3 years now, so it might be something that the village wants to look at in terms of investment. I had originally said that we maybe just want to refer to the state statute, but there's some things in the states, you know, so that we didn't have to
right,
revise our
every
policy
time.
Every time something
okay.
changed, except that there's the ability to invest in like repurchase agreements and stuff
right.
like that in the state statute, and I don't think that's
which
in our investment
do.
Policy,
right.
which we don't want to do. So I think I'm back to we just
okay.
have to amend our investment policy
okay.
to allow, and that was recently approved.
And
so.
you baked in the higher interest rate revenues that we should receive from our investments going forward based on the...
Well, the investment
yeah.
policy is just generic
yeah,
as
it just
far
says
as
what
we can
invest
do.
In.
Right. So
in our, the budget has been going
right.
up because the
because
interest rates have been going up.
Yes,
yeah, the budgeted
sorry.
Revenues have been going up. And even if you can see in here on the line here for investment income in the CAFR,
right.
we went up $20,000 in the general fund in 2018, and we'll go up again this
right.
year. So.
Great.
And we... on an annual basis just go over all of our financial policies just to make sure we don't need to do any updating, and if we do then we have to bring that back to this body for recommendation.
Yeah,
yeah. So if we do, we don't probably have to have, we can just go right to the board with that change in investment
yeah I'm
policy.
Just making you aware
okay.
of it.
So we'll probably have that for the next
I'm not sure.
Okay, if not then December, if we don't have a meeting then January. Okay. All right, so that's that'll be a pending item.
It's just out there. It's something
right.
that we need to look at. I'm not going to start investing in corporate bonds
yeah.
in my last
right.
2 months. So
go crazy.
I don't
right.
feel a sense of urgency, but.
Okay, are there any other matters to come before the Finance Committee that we want to talk about?
Exactly.
Okay. Having none, I would like to call for adjournment.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.